This podcast is brought to you by Sega's Napoleon Total War, the newest chapter in the award-winning Total War series. Rated T for teen.
Oh, so you did hear my giraffe joke?
I think I've blocked it
say
out.
Say yes.
Say yes.
No, say no, because I want to hear it.
A guy and a giraffe walk into a bar, and they start ordering some beers from the bartender, and they keep drinking more and more beer. And eventually the giraffe is like, ugh, starts swaying back and forth and just falls over sideways onto the ground. The guy looks down and he drinks the rest of his beer and starts walking out of the bar. And the bartender's like, hey, you can't leave that lion there. And the guy turns around and says, that's not a lion, that's a giraffe.
This is the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 213 for Thursday, March 4th, 2010. On today's show, we speculate wildly on the cases of Infinity Ward v. Activision and Ubisoft DRM v. Gamers, ride a rocky Battlefield Bad Company 2 launch, cover the release of Supreme Commander 2, followed closely by the re-release of its ancestor, Silent Hunter 4 leaves dry dock, and more. I'm your host, the Honorable Dan Stapleton, and with me today are our Editor-in-Chief, Logan Decker.
Hi.
Our Senior Editor, Evan Lottie.
Ramirez.
Eric gets what I'm saying.
Our intern and one-man goon squad, Eric Belsas.
I am proud to represent something awful.
And our producer, Andy Bell.
Dan, was that some elite submarine terminology?
The goon squad? No, that's a reference to our first story today.
Or what about dry dock?
Dry dock is a submarine is in dry dock and then it goes in the water and launches, right?
Nothing like military terminology.
Yep. We lost Logan somehow. Nope, can't hear you.
Evan knows what I'm saying.
Yes. Percussive maintenance, Logan.
Nope, can't hear you.
Something went into a loop and I heard Dan on a loop.
Contact.
That was weird.
Evan, you have to watch Generation Kill. And then your terminology for Arma 2 will skyrocket.
Oh, man. I really want to. I saw Kotaku used Oscar Mike wrong in a headline today, and I nearly freaked out. I actually left a comment for them.
Oh, good boy.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Because it means, when you say Oscar
I
Mike,
know,
it
but
means...
you were that guy.
Yeah, pretty much. It means on the move. It's that simple. Anyway, go ahead.
Anyway. I just came into the office after getting called in for jury duty. I can't say what case they're considering me for, but I can say that it is not the Infinity Ward case.
Oh, man.
I was kind of disappointed. I showed up and it's like, oh, it's some other crap about something I don't care about, really? So all of gamerdom is abuzz today about the drama going down at Activision this week. Apparently a couple days ago, an Activision goon squad, not Eric, showed up at Infinity Ward and evicted the developer's co-founders, Jason West and Vince Zampella. The facts kind of trickled out amid rumors of, you know, dead hookers and blow, which, you know, we started. But, yeah. Whoa.
It's one of those feedback loops that Logan gets.
that was a gasp on repeat. That was kind of, that just shows how shocked Logan really was.
Yeah, that was no editing either.
Yeah. So it turns out that Activision is saying that West and Zampella are insubordinate, and West and Zampella are saying that Activision is greedy and wants to get out of paying them their Modern Warfare bonuses and royalties. So they've now been fired, but they're suing Activision and asking for $36 million in damages. And Evan, can you read a little bit from the legal docs you were reading from earlier in the lawsuit filing?
Oh, gladly. Oh my goodness. I mean, I've got to say, like, Activision and Vince and Jason, like, bravo. You're branching out into a new field of entertainment. I mean, you usually we have to wait, you know, months and maybe years for these things to even develop some sense of drama. I mean, usually it's buried in like this heavy legal language to protect themselves, whatever. But I mean, this was clearly meant to be read by fans, and they're clearly instigating a PR disaster for Activision. Again, yeah, it's all allegations at this point. We don't know what it's true exactly, but
it's theater.
it's incredible. It's a thrilling read, honestly. So from page 2 here, line 5, paragraph 1, it says, the nature of the dispute. This lawsuit is solely and regrettably the result of the astonishing arrogance and unbridled greed of defendant Activision. Again, this is written by a lawyer representing Jason West and Vince Zampella from...
Nothing that any lawyer writes in, like, shocks me anymore after reading some of Jack Thompson's legal filings.
Yeah, sure. But he did get disbarred.
Fair enough. I mean, there's just the connotation that like lawyers and like legal documents have to be very straightforward and like very all-encompassing and not personal in this way. But anyway, I'll continue. Plaintiffs Jason West and Vince Zampella are among the most talented and successful video game developers in the world.
Do you know who I am?
Wow. They created for Activision two video game franchises, both Call of Duty and Modern Warfare, that became the most successful in the company's, indeed the industry's, history, lining Activision's pockets with billions bolded and italicized of dollars in revenue and creating a diehard fan base in the millions.
How come they get to say that that it's two franchises when one of them is, you know, Call of Duty and one of them is Call of Duty Modern Warfare?
I'm really not sure.
And by that definition, is Call of Duty World at War its own franchise? I don't know. But I mean, I guess there are different time periods, and I guess you could say that like Dawn of War, Warhammer 40,000 and Warhammer are two different franchises. But yeah. Anyway, carry on.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the introductory meat of the document. It kind of goes on to say again that they're claiming at least, I mean, it really like lauds over and over again how much money they made for the company. And it mentions this document called the Memorandum of Understanding that, as it's explained here, is kind of an agreement they had initially with Activision to extend their contract to make Modern Warfare 2. And that, you know, that's kind of what it's going to come down to, whether or not that was their agreements there in terms of royalties and what was allowed where and when. Are proper. But there is some latter interesting stuff that's mentioned. According to Jason and Vince and their lawyer, Activision conducted this investigation, which they claim was sort of reconstructed to engineer a reason to fire them, to get them out of their contract or whatever. And that took place a few months before they were fired on March 1st. And the way they describe this investigation, you know, again, we don't know whether or not this is true or how accurate it is, is pretty interesting. and it reads, Activision conducted the investigation in a manner to maximize the inconvenience and anxiety it would cause West and Zampella. On little notice, Activision insisted in conducting interviews over the President's Day holiday weekend. West and Zampella were interrogated for over 6 hours in a windowless conference room. Okay. Activision investigators brought other Infinity Ward employees to tears in their questioning and accusations and threatened West and Zampella with insubordination if they attempted to console them. Activision's outside counsel demanded that West and Zampella surrender their personal computers, phones, and communication devices for Activision to review, blah, blah, blah. When West and Zampella asserted their legally protected privacy rights, Activision's counsel said that doing so constituted further acts of insubordination. So, wow.
if that's true, I mean, that's not good for Activision.
It sounds like a load of crap. I mean, like, what are they? It's so dramatic. It's so high. You know, the temperature is just soaring right through the roof. Privacy rights? What privacy rights? You work for a company, you know.
Well, I mean, if they're talking about your personal property, the company doesn't.
Yeah, but they're wholly owned by Activision. Wholly owned.
It just sounds like the same thing that happens every day in the world, which is two people fighting over money. And what's the big deal? I mean, the whole thing about the Goon Squad showing up, every company does that. You know, you send security along, not because you want to humiliate anyone, but in case something unpleasant happens.
Yeah.
Someone's there and you don't want anyone to walk away with data, you know, that they may not be, you know, it's just everything's just normal. And it just sounds like some people fighting over money, and that's what happens when you have these when you strike gold, you know.
Exactly. I mean, obviously this document, this text really presents Activision as this money hungry, ridiculous, evil.
It's so over the top.
Entity. But at the same time, they're not stupid, right? I mean, they can't possibly think, I mean, Call of Duty is their golden goose, more than Guitar Hero, more than Tony Hawk or whatever. How could they possibly, why would they ever want to remove
the
head leadership, right? How could they possibly think that, you know, ousting the head leadership of its best and most successful company that's already generated $1 billion off its most recent game would be a good idea. I mean, they had to have.
You know what? Everybody's replaceable. Everybody is replaceable. And if somebody is difficult to work with, you know, I mean, there are very few people in the world that aren't replaceable. You know what I mean? Like Picasso.
You say they're replaceable, but I mean, you look at what happened with the Medal of Honor series when all the Infinity Ward guys jumped ship and went to found Infinity Ward. Mm-hmm. And you look at what happens when you give like all of the Infinity Ward's tools to Treyarch. Mm-hmm. To make a 12 duty game, it just mm-hmm. doesn't catch on the same way that Infinity Ward does. And I'm not Infinity Ward's biggest fan. Their games just don't really work for me that well. But they do have you know a touch that appeals to a lot of people.
Sure, absolutely, and I'll buy that. You know, and I'm not saying that these guys weren't crucial or critical to the game's success. You know, or to the quality of the original Modern Warfare.
And if that's true, then they are not replaceable.
You know, who knows? Maybe another company can pull it off.
Well,
maybe another team can pull it off. Or
that's entirely speculation. I mean, to date, nobody has created a game that has been as successful commercially as Modern Warfare 2 mm-hmm. in history.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can just replace those guys. I mean, that's you know, kind of bold.
Really? I mean, I think it's bold to say that it was as a result of those two guys' direction that it was the most popular game in history.
Well, I mean, it's not necessarily.
I mean, it may have had a little bit to do with a marketing campaign that was unprecedented.
I'm sure it did, but it also had to do with the quality of that game and the prior game.
You know what? But how many copies did it sell before anyone knew whether or not it was a quality game?
That's
millions.
Entirely fair, but I mean,
millions.
Maybe the prior game too.
Yeah. Oh no, yeah, and I agree, but I don't think we're even in disagreement here. I just think that this, you know, this document just sounds very sketchy to me, and it's just people fighting over money. And if they want to let them go, and if they think they can make a go of it on their own, well, I'm looking forward to seeing where they go next.
Well, where they're going next is or where these two guys go next, or where Activision
where these two guys go next, and then what they'll do, and then we'll really see, you know,
right?
Yeah,
who's got the touch?
And that's actually the more interesting part of the story. I'm curious about. There's some rumor, and again, totally unsubstantiated for us. We have no facts to represent this, but that Zampella and West were communicating with competitors, you know, maybe EA to set something up. And the text that they represented, that they actually put to court, mentions in their agreement to make Modern Warfare 2, they were hesitant to do that again because they wanted to make a new IP, but they were sort of convinced with money, I guess. But they were resistant to that at first, which sort of creates that story that they might have been wanting to go elsewhere for a long time. Yeah, I don't know. It's not an extreme or like radical controversy, but it is interesting to watch because of this text. I think
it's mm-hmm. drama, and you know, I think it is all to a large extent theater, because I'm sure it's not as one sided as either side makes it out to be. But I think in particular, Zampella and West are really going for Activision's Achilles heel, because they do have such an image problem. As you know, a greedy
corporation. That's true. Yeah, yeah.
They are trying to do as much damage as they can on the way out.
Yeah, and that's a that's a pretty effective maneuver. You know,
it's very effective. Yeah. I mean, even if all this stuff, even if none of this stuff is true, even if it's all, if it goes to court and it's just proven that's not true, but you know, maybe they do owe them some money. Even if all that's proven false, all the damage is done at this point.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I mean, that there's already such hatred for Activision's. Yeah, Activision's like, you know, exploiting every franchise, and there's all the like incredibly corporate stuff they do, that, you know, it could be very damaging to Activision.
Yeah.
More money, more problems.
Speaking of warfare, Ubisoft has fired a shot across the bow of pirates with their DRM of mass destruction. on Assassin's Creed 2 and Silent Hunter 5, which requires you to be online at all times in order to play. Otherwise, it will kick you out of the game. So, but it looks like the pirates are already parrying, and there are reportedly cracked versions of Silent Hunter 5 floating around a day after release.
Can you parry a cannonball?
And if you want to be specific, I said a weapon of mass destruction. So can you parry a nuke? That's the question.
Okay. I mean, it's the right terminology. I just would love to see it. That's all.
Yeah. But maybe you can do that in like Just Cause 2. I don't know. But there are reportedly some cracked versions out there. And so now that Ubisoft is all the, like, if there are cracked versions that work fine for the pirates, all Ubisoft is left with is the collateral damage, to continue the metaphor, all of the legitimate customers who may or may not have unstable internet connections, who could have problems because of this DRM.
You were talking earlier about theater, you know, with this Infinity Ward business. And, I think that's what's going on here as well, because, you know, Ubi's they've got years of experience here. They're a great company. They're a big company. They're smart. And they saw it come. They must have seen it coming miles away, right? They knew it would be cracked
the minute it
came out. So I just have to assume that this whole debacle was just because somebody, we're doing something about piracy, even though they know it's not going to work.
Right.
I just have to believe that.
I doubt that they thought it would be broken this quickly.
But it's always broken this quickly.
Not always. There have been success stories that hold out for, you know, weeks or even months.
I can only think of one that held out for more than a week.
What was that?
I can't remember. You know, what was it? It was,
I don't have any specific examples either, but I have heard stories of,
I've never heard of one that took more than a week, except for one instance.
Didn't the Blu-ray copy production lasts pretty long, the decrypting methods the Blu-ray took to rip them?
Yeah, a couple months, you know, something like that.
I remember that lasting a little while.
But I do want to say that, okay, I don't approve of this always on internet connection thing. I think it's insane. It's why I wouldn't buy their games on that basis, because my internet connection drops out all the time. You know, I have Comcast. So, no warning. So I think this is a horrible thing. But on the other hand, I gotta say that Ubisoft has been, they're a great publisher. They publish fantastic games, and they have experimented with ways of addressing piracy in both directions. And, the PC version of the reboot of Prince of Persia, the cel-shaded one, had no copy protection on it whatsoever. And so, they just wanted to see how that would turn out, you know, and, I don't think you can judge anything based on one, you know, example, but, you know, and when they used to use Star Force, and when they were screwing up everybody's PCs with it, you know, they listened. It took them a long time, but they listened, and they're like, all right, you're right. This is just not worth it. And they took it off. And so I think that they're a responsive company, and I think ultimately they will take off this requirement.
Well,
can I just say one more thing in their defense, which I think is very impressive, is that they very, very prominently state you need a constant internet connection. Let's see, I have a box right here. It says, a big box, you cannot miss it. A permanent internet connection is required to play the game. I think that's pretty unambiguous, and it's right on the front of the cover, and that is respectable.
They are definitely upfront about it, but you know, it's still a deal breaker for a lot of people.
Oh, it's a deal breaker for me. Absolutely, I wouldn't go for it.
Are these games available on Steam? The ones that are coming?
Yes, they are.
And then do they have the separate copy protection as well as the Steam? Oh, wow,
man, that is a shocker.
Yeah, I mean,
that doesn't make any sense at all to me.
It's a DRM sandwich with game in the middle.
Well, I mean, they're not the first
double.
They're not the first company to have double down on the DRM with Steam. I mean, a lot of games do that. I mean, Crysis has it on Steam. I think. What else does it? All right.
Well, I mean, you could
way
say
to go, Captain Giggles.
You could say in some way, like some of the EA online games, like you have to have an EA online account and be logged into it while you're playing, and
Well, not necessarily. I mean, like, yeah. which games make you do that to play the single player?
I'm not sure.
I don't think there are any. I think you can play Battlefield Bad Company 2 without ever logging in. Mm-hmm. You can play The Sims 3 without ever logging in.
You know what? That is something I want to call out. This is what it's about, people. Anyone who's a developer or publisher who's listening, please, Battlefield Bad Company 2 gives you a choice. Who would have thought PC gamers like choice? You know, it lets you choose between online activation each time you start the game. Correct me if I'm wrong, by the way.
On up to 10 machines.
Okay, yeah. So, or you can do the traditional disk check. And believe it or not, I'm one of those people who still prefers a disk check because, you know, sometimes my connection goes out and I want to make sure I can play my game at any time. And so that is just so brilliant. Give players a choice. Give them some say in how they enjoy your product.
Yeah, I mean, even with the online authentication ones that, I mean, like most online authentication except for the Ubisoft stuff, it's just a one-time authentication. So even if you have an unstable internet connection, if you can get through once, then you're set.
Oh, okay. I'm down with that.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's all Battlefield would make you do.
Oh man, even better, you know?
So, and yeah, Battlefield, I do like the choice because I am of the persuasion where I don't like to swap out discs all the time. That mm-hmm. drives me nuts. Mm-hmm. So, I kind of like online activation just because I, as long as I have the,
You know, it used to drive me nuts swapping discs until I discovered the Disc Hub. Go to thediskhub.com. thediskhub.com. And it is absolutely brilliant. It's this little triangle that holds your CDs in it, but in a little sort of felt groove so they don't get scratched. But the thing is, I think the guy stopped making them. So, oh no, it looks like he's selling them again. It's one of the coolest things in the world. We had it in that 10 things feature we did a while back. Anyway, sorry.
I still just don't like the exercise of having to, I mean, not that it's physically trying. I don't like having to lift my arm. Is there any way, can't somebody else do it?
I'm private. Give me 2 reps.
Okay. I'm just saying.
I don't like going through that routine every time I want to go from playing one game to playing a different game. I like just being able to double click and go.
Yeah. Plus my PC is under my desk, so I have to, you know, crawl down in there. Yeah.
It's inconvenient.
Mm-hmm. I'm emotionally opposed to exposing any data to the air, so I can't have my disk out in the open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, our UK bureau did contact Ubisoft about the alleged cracked version. And Ubisoft responds that the cracked versions out there that they are aware of are not complete. Like they will quit after you play for a certain amount of time. Who knows if that's actually true or not? I mean, they could just be saying, "Oh, don't bother downloading that." And we haven't tested it because we're not pirates. They say that it's a broken version of the game. They have said they do say that if in the event that there is a confirmed version that is floating out there that pirates can play without any kind of problem. If there is that version and they are aware of it, they say it is possible and they will consider patching out the DRM that requires you to be always on.
Wow.
They didn't say we will do that, but they will consider.
Sure. Yeah. And at the risk of sounding overly ass-kissy here, I do want to emphasize that when we criticize, this protection, we're just criticizing the protection. We're not criticizing Ubisoft. We get that piracy is a huge problem. We get that. We totally understand it. We know it's frustrating, not just for publishers, but for the investors that give them the money to do what they're doing and to create these great games. So, you know, we may advocate against buying this game, but it's not about Ubi. It's about the player, being an advocate for the player who wants a good experience and deserves to be able to play when he lives in San Francisco and has Comcast.
But isn't that Ubi's decision that causes that inconvenience?
Yeah, but I think that they are, what's the word? They're, they're trying things in good faith to see what works. And this isn't going to work. And they might have thought it did, but I don't think it's going to work. And they're acknowledging, that, you know, hey, if it doesn't work, maybe we'll do an about face, you know, they're thinking out loud in a sense.
I don't know. I personally don't feel an obligation to like give them the benefit of the doubt for doing something that is clearly a bad idea. Mm-hmm. I mean, this from the get go was never going to work.
I told you at the beginning. I totally agree with that. Yeah.
Right. So in this case, they did something stupid.
But there are other reasons. Like if you have to show investors who know nothing about games that you did something to protect their investment, what else are you going to say?
There are other ways. Other publishers.
Yeah, there are other ways.
Publishers have not done this.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
This is an extraordinary measure that they took, and it was a bad idea.
Yeah.
I say, you know, shame on Ubisoft for that.
And you know what? DRM Squirrel says shame too.
Yeah.
Amen.
The other big launch was Battlefield Bad Company 2, which we did discuss a little bit earlier. We are going to be hosting a Battlefield Bad Company 2 server, and we were going to do it tonight, although there may be some problems. Evan, tell me where it hurts.
I'm pointing at it.
Where did the bad company touch you?
Wow, double entendre.
I won out.
I'm pointing at my video card right now. But,
whoa! Oh, sorry.
Yeah. So the Battlefield Bad Company 2 launch has been kind of mixed performance wise and connectivity wise. We see this a lot.
We should say though that we do like the game.
So what's going on? I've heard a lot of people crashing to desktop. Like what have you seen so far?
It seems like multiple issues. Yesterday and sort of the evening before, there were issues with Punkbuster, which is like the anti-cheat service. It's also used by original Modern Warfare.
Yeah.
It's also used by Quake 3. It's a little draconian.
Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous and messy, but it's in terms of how it integrates in the game, it's pretty smooth. But it was kicking people out of the game randomly because the program detected something. Then they
based on the color of their skin.
Wow,
that too. But on top of that, there seems to be a lot of strange performance issues people are experiencing, including myself. At least at my work computer here, when I tried playing any server, including our own, which is like 40 miles from here, I'm getting between 5 and 7 frames a second.
Whoa!
Regardless of what settings I'm putting on or resolution or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's just inexplicable. I have 600 ping, and I've talked with our server provider, artofwarcentral.com, and they have kind of gotten a lot of similar reports, and it's definitely not their servers. Their servers are running fine. And at the same time, there are a lot of people that can connect to our server and can have a good time and are playing on it. It's almost always full. So there's a combination of things. The EA accounts seem like another source of frustration for people that they can't log into their account or they're losing their stats or
stats is terrible in a Battlefield game.
Yeah, it seems like a host of issues that need patching. But at the same time, like it's really inconsistent because I was playing on the same computer the day it came out and it was completely smooth, no issues whatsoever.
So there was a patch though, right? That mucked things up.
I believe so. They didn't really release patch notes. We don't know what was changed. But I would expect some more changes within the next few days. But yeah, in terms of our own Battlefield event, that's still going to be happening tonight. I'm going to be adding that to Steam. By the time you listen to this podcast, it's probably happening. But we'll continue to have them every week, at least once a week, absolutely. But if you want to find our server in Battlefield, go into the server browser. In the search field, just type PC Gamer. It is case sensitive for some unknown bizarre reason. So capitalize PC and the G, I guess. And it should.
Is there a space?
There is a space. Thank you. And the server should show up there. It's PC Gamer, the War Bagel. And
are any of those capitalized?
I mean, you just search for PC capitalized and you'll find it. That's all. But yeah, it's 32 players and fun when it works.
Yeah, and let us know if it works for you guys or if you're having the same problem Evan is. Also in the wild now is Supreme Commander 2, which after a few annoying hours of Steam-related launch problems is up and running. I'm really enjoying the multiplayer. I've played a few games already, and it's a very, very different game from the last one. I really like how quickly you can get to the crazy experimental units, like the you know, basically giant tanks and big walker robots that shoot lasers out of everything.
Isn't there a squid too?
There is a squid, which is actually
Kraken.
Yeah, it's a Kraken, yeah. Which actually is not one of the better units, but it, you know, it's cool for variety. It's a experimental submarine that, you know, it's okay, but I mean the naval combat is, it's pretty good. It's not really the highlight of it because it only happens on certain maps. But anyway. So there is a lot of hate out there though for this game from fans of the original SEPCOM because it does ratchet back the complexity a bit. The original SEPCOM, like Total Annihilation before it, had this crazy rate-based economy, which you were able to spend resources before you got them. As you were collecting them, you know, you would have a constant flow of resources coming in and out, and even if you didn't have a 400 metal, you could still start building your factory or your unit because you had metal coming in faster than it was going out being spent.
If I can just interject, Dan, I'm sorry. I think you just explained what's wrong with our economy.
Right, and that's kind of a good analogy because
we built too many squids.
Yes, you built way too many squids, Andy, and you crashed the economy. So
I'm sorry,
George. Yeah. That's what George Bush did. I mean,
right? No, you could literally crash your economy in SEPCOM and Total Annihilation by building too much stuff.
And then all
of a sudden you couldn't build anything until you stopped all of your building projects, all but one because you just had too much going on. And it was too complex for a lot of people. It turned off a lot of people from playing. And just like the real economy, which is too complex for a lot of people to manage. Yeah. They don't really they'll buy a bunch of stuff on credit and don't realize that they don't have enough money coming in to pay those bills. And they go bankrupt. So
then there's a war recession and your infantry are complaining about healthcare and public options.
Yeah, so in SEPCOM 2, they scale that back and they turn it into a more conventional RTS economy. So if you don't have 400 metal, you can't start building that unit. And that has annoyed a lot of the hardcore who have been going around on forums on Steam, on Gas Powered's website, the developer, on like just about every forum I've seen. And somebody has, on just about every forum, somebody has said that this game feels like a console game, which is baffling to me. If this feels like a console game, then it's still, you know, at least as complex as the, you know, Command and Conquer's 1-3 and StarCraft 1 and StarCraft 2. If this feels like a console game, so do all of those. I mean, it's a totally legitimate complaint to say it's less complex and I liked the complexity, but to say it feels like a dumbed down console game sounds, that's kind of ridiculous to me.
I applaud your rant, Dan. I'm with you.
One thing I'd like to add is applaud Gas Powered Games for is I love that they kept dual monitor support in because it's just such a cool feature, not just because it's like uniquely PC or whatever. It's just such an interesting concept that you can have these two completely different like views of a battlefield and they're both fully functional. And it's a blast. I'm glad to have that back after SEPCOM 1.
And Supreme Commander is uniquely suited for it just because of the strategic zoom. So you can have your main monitor where, you know, you're just viewing a unit close up and then the secondary monitor, you're zoomed way out and it's basically a giant mini map. Mm-hmm. And you can zoom at will either of these easily screens. So it's really fantastic for it. Unfortunately, I tried using it last night and it didn't work well for me. I had a graphics glitch, but there was a new NVIDIA driver release, just before that. So maybe that mucked it up.
I'm on ATI, so maybe it worked okay for me. I don't know.
I saw it.
Have you tried it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. It did work. Okay. Okay.
It worked fine for me. Yeah.
Okay, so that's a good sign. I mean, it was probably a driver tweak that'll be fixed, and I hear there's going to be a patch coming this Friday. I'm looking forward to playing more. I had an interesting game last night where the research system has changed from the first game. In the first game, you had like each factory had to be individually upgraded from tier 1 to tier 2 to tier 3 in order to access the most powerful units. In this one, it's, you know, kind of a more conventional research system where you build resource generator buildings that, that charge up research points, and you spend those to unlock units. And most people that I was playing with last night were just research farming right and left, just, you know, trying to get to the high level experimental units. And that just gives you all kinds of opportunity to bomb the crap out of them. So I was having a little fun with that. So and speaking of Chris Taylor RTS, is the very first one, Total Annihilation, was just re-released on Impulse, which is kind of interesting. And that's a game that Atari now has the rights to. And we were trying to get, for a story we did a while ago, we were trying to get some of the musical score from it, because it's a Jeremy Soule musical score. And it's one of the ones that for me is one of the most memorable PC game scores of all time. And I'm like, oh, okay, this hasn't been touched in, you know, 13 years. Came out in 97. Hasn't been touched in more than a decade. Surely Atari will have no problem with letting us, you know, put a few of these tracks on the disc because they're so memorable. And they turned us down. And I was really confused as to why they would do that. And I guess it turns out it's because they were actually planning to start selling it again. And for $10 on Impulse, you can get it, which is, you know, it's pretty cool, especially given how many awesome mods are out for it. And for those of you who haven't tried it, or if you missed it in 1997, it's very similar to Supreme Commander 1. The economy is that same very complicated model. There are just tons and tons of different types of units, just a mind-boggling array of units. And one of the things they did with that, they were kind of like the original DLC. They kept putting out new units like almost, you know, every month or so after the game came out, or even more frequently than that. So you'd be able to download new units, and people would make new units. You would just get tons and tons of crazy units in there. It really does make me miss the strategic zoom of SUPCOM, though, because it is a locked view, and you can't get that much on the screen, especially at low res. But it's a really fun game if you get that retro itch. Did anybody else play it?
No.
Not really.
No.
I'm using Eric's Warcraft headset.
Nice try. Does it have a good skirmish mode?
It does. I don't really recall how good the AI was. I don't think it was spectacular. I mostly played multiplayer.
Hey, I don't need them to be great or anything. So.
Yeah. I mean, the nice thing about that game relative to Supreme Commander 2, though, is that they didn't even bother trying with a story. Supreme Commander 2's story is not good. For some reason, they have like a Genesis device kind of weapon. From like Star Trek 2. It's like right out of Star Trek 2, except it's a space station. And the villain just makes no sense. You don't understand why he's doing what he's doing. He's just this giggling fool that, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. But if you just ignore that, the campaigns are kind of cool. I mean, the missions are, you know, they're not just necessarily straight up, you know, go kill the other base, which is nice.
Sure. Before we move on to questions, Dan, can I share some, news in cloth map related news?
No.
If that's not a weird statement to say. So Elemental War of Magic, another, I guess it's fair to call it strategy, right?
It's absolutely a strategy, yeah.
Terrific. Yeah.
It's not real-time strategy, but it's turn-based strategy.
Right. I'm on the ball there. Okay. So they announced what their limited edition is going to be like. So for $70, and this is on forums.elementalgame.com, you're going to get a poster for the game, a 200-page manual, an extended musical soundtrack CD, and a pewter dragon. I'm not sure what the size of the dragon is. It looks, I don't know, you can't really tell. But yes, a cloth map, 18 by 26 of the world of Elemental. Feet, hopefully. You can use it for picnicking.
I want a blanket.
And I just can't say how thrilled I was to see one of those again. Bravo, Stardock.
Ooh, you can zoom in on the dragon. It's loading very slowly. It doesn't look huge, but it's detailed enough that it's it's probably bigger than an intro cue at all. Cool little dragon.
Play as or against Napoleon Bonaparte, the greatest military tactician in history, leading thousands of troops on an unparalleled bid for power in this newest chapter of the award-winning Total War series. Sega's Napoleon Total War, in stores February 23rd, rated T for teen.
Anyway, so let's take some questions.
Okay, my PC gamer question would be, what do you usually drink when playing a video game, if anything?
Vodka. What else?
Yeah, I'm partial to a gin and tonic myself. although actually I have kind of an addiction at this point to Diet Cola. I brought in today a giant 32 pack from Costco of caffeine free Diet Coke, which is pretty much the only way I control my obsessive eating.
Caffeine free?
I mean, there's no point in the caffeine. Caffeine it doesn't really do much to me.
Oh, you're immune.
But pretty much. But if I do drink like too much of it, it starts to like give me kind of a weird, not headache, but kind of not good sensation.
Well, you know, so, it can kill you.
yeah, if you work at it. But like, I never get like a caffeine high.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, if it costs the same, why would I, you know, just not get the caffeine and avoid that weird sensation so I can drink even more of it.
Placebo.
Right.
Totally.
Yeah, but I don't want to get twitchy when I'm playing games, so I usually don't drink anything caffeinated. But you
need the twitch, Logan. You need the twitch. The twitch is your friend.
But it's weird. I have that whole Asian thing going on where you can't like if I have a beer, I get really red and tired and my face turns like into a tomato.
Yeah, but that's alcohol.
No, but it's less. it happens less with vodka.
Hmm.
Isn't that crazy? Like wine, one tablespoon of wine and I look like an exploded tomato. I just pour like straight vodka right in the glass and it's delicious. Oh man, I love it.
Norm was telling me, Dan, that you like to drink White Russians while you play.
I do enjoy a White Russian once in a while as well.
Is that accurate? What, White Russian again?
What is a White Russian?
Yeah.
It's half and half. It's vodka, half and half, and Kahlua.
Right, yeah.
Haven't you ever seen the Big Lebowski?
Yeah, I just couldn't remember what was in it. Yeah. They're good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a milkshake.
Myself, on the non-alcoholic side of things, if I'm sitting down for a good long gaming session, there's nothing like a root beer float to me. It just keeps me going.
And Evan, did you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, beer. I can name the brand if you want me to.
But yeah, name the brand.
I really like Landshark. It's Jimmy Buffett's company. It's just like has this kind of like Florida taste to it, or what I associate with Florida. It's good.
It tastes like Florida. So it tastes like old people and Disney?
Precisely.
Those are and Jimmy alligators. Buffett's beers?
Yeah, Margaritaville.
Wow. Didn't know that.
There you go. Now you feel like a tool, don't you?
I've got a few in my fridge right now, tooling me up.
Nice.
I'm more of a fat tire man myself.
Oh, absolutely.
Tastes like chocolate.
Anyway. No problem with chocolate?
I do, actually.
I like really sugary, caffeiney sodas. So Mountain Dew is my best friend.
Sugar is the work of the devil. Do you know where they harvest sugar from?
The devil's butt?
Yes. Little girls? It is scraped from the devil's colon.
Is it like Adam?
And then it is processed into those little packets. If you want to support the devil's colon, then go ahead. Enjoy eating your sugary drinks and snacks. Or you could just apply your lips to Satan's ass yourself.
Wow.
I did swear off of like regular soda. I only drink diet except when used as a mixer.
I know. I'm not opposed to diet, like, you know, principally, but the thing is I like the little bit of a rush I get from sugar soda. I don't know.
Interesting.
It could be that I just have a super fast metabolism, though, and I'm like,
Do you find that it helps you in your gaming?
Absolutely. The caffeine more than the sugar.
Otherwise, you would have fallen asleep in the middle of Dragon Age.
No, it wasn't that boring.
Oh,
just
kidding. If there's anybody in the comments that has like a really specific, unique drink that they feel empowered by or somehow helped by when they're gaming, please share. I'm curious.
And empowered by, we mean and drunkened by.
Yeah, exactly. we got samples of this a couple weeks ago. I haven't tried it while gaming, but it's called Game Juice. Game Juice, gamejuice.com.
Game Juice.
And,
How many games do they need to process?
Squeeze.
I mean, no, I mean, when I'm now that Battlefield is out, though, like I'm going to be hardcore on the sauce for Battlefield, like because I used to play Battlefield 2. Like every Sunday, I would play Battlefield 2 and just buy. There's a place that still sells Jolt Cola in Salt Lake that I know.
Holy cow!
And I would just buy like 3 Jolts and just be at the top of the charts. And when I didn't have the Jolts, like I'm not at the top, you know.
Correlation is not causation, Andy.
I don't know, dude.
even when you're high on Jolt, but yeah, game juice. It's funny. The thing I like about it most, other than it's apple with ginger flavoring, is when you turn the nutritional reference or whatever, the card there, it says contains 0% juice, of course. Contains no juice.
Hello, PC Gamer. This is Michael, also known as Mikey on Steam. Congrats on finishing up your 200th issue. My question to you is, how do you feel about the length of respawn timers in games like Team Fortress 2 or Battlefield? I personally enjoy timers of at least 15 seconds because it allows me to spectate other people on my team, gives me a small break in action, and allows me to rest because after spending a few minutes getting killstreak, I start getting nervous and my stress level just increases as I keep worrying about dying. However, I often run into forum posts where people complain how 15 seconds is just way too long and that they would have no timers at all. So once again, how do the people of PC Gamer feel about respawn timers? Keep up the great work. I'll see you on the battlefield.
It's actually a really well put question. Mike Yan, if anybody else plays with him, he's a big contributor to our community, takes awesome videos of our ARMA activities, and lives actually pretty nearby here in San Francisco, not to give away personal information. But I mean, it's something people don't realize. I mean, respawn timers aren't simply a balancing tool, right? It's kind of a pacing tool as much as that, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, pacing is part of balancing. So it falls under that umbrella, I'd say.
Yeah, but in terms of like the, I don't know, emotional highs and lows that a player has when they're playing a shooter, I mean, if you play, I mean, Modern Warfare 2 is the perfect example. Instant respawn in I think almost every mode except for one. You see the kill cam of you getting killed when you die, you know, from your opponent's perspective, and then you can immediately hit F and jump back into the meat grinder, and it's a different kind of feeling. It's an extremely fast-paced, demanding game in that way. But I don't like it as much for the reasons that Mike mentioned. I mean, in Team Fortress 2 and Counter-Strike, I guess in Battlefield as well, you kind of get a better sense of what's going on. You can sort of think more about teamwork when you're given that opportunity to reflect and sort of view the battlefield from above or from a different perspective. And again, you know, talk to your teammates who are also dead or incapacitated and sort things out.
Isn't Counter-Strike the opposite end of the extreme there, where you don't respawn until the new round?
It's true, but the rounds are so quick in Counter-Strike that I think it allows you to, like, that time of death is like really a chance to iterate on tactics. Because of the map design is so focused on choke points, where it's like, okay, we're either going left or right. Let's try right this time. Okay, we died. Let's go left this time and try this.
Right, but you can be out for several minutes.
Yeah, it's true. But
and to me that kind of screws up my pacing, my enjoyable pacing, because I don't want to necessarily just sit there watching other people play. I want to play.
Yeah, it's a different experience. And I think at this point, you know, Call of Duty is definitely at the far extreme end of that pacing.
But with Call of Duty, doesn't it allow you to determine when you want to come back in? I mean, you can hit F and pop right back in, but couldn't you wait 15 seconds if you wanted to?
I guess. I mean, if you're given the chance to play and not play and kill things, I mean, when it's a game that's so focused on getting points and getting points and getting kill streaks and getting atomic bombs and getting airplanes and, you have to be in the game to get that momentum going. So there's little reason for you not to be.
You have to be in Counter-Strike to kill a terrorist. No, indeed. Nobody killed a terrorist by not being Counter-Strike. That's all I'm saying.
Fair enough. And where is Counter-Strike 2, by the way? Man, I want to see that happen. And a new Source engine. The Valve really needs a new engine.
Well, I mean, why would they make a Counter-Strike 2 until there's a new Source engine? I mean, what can they really add to it without an entirely new engine?
I was just going to say, my guess is that, like, Orange Box is so runaway successful. My guess would be their next engine, they're going to be like, boom, I don't know, Half-Life 3, Counter-Strike 2, some other cool game, like, because they've got to come out. Yeah, they've got to come out hitting hard if they do dev a new engine and make like a lemon box or something.
Well, if they make Half-Life 3, it won't be part of a box. Dude, why would they package it?
They did. They put Steam on Mac OS. They're gonna do that.
Well, they may very well put Steam over on Mac OS, which and I guess it's kind of a sure thing now at this point, based on all the hidden files that people found in the new beta UI update. There are all kinds of Mac-y looking things, which, you know, it's there. I saw a list of like all the games on Steam that have Mac versions, and there are enough there. I mean, they're not like the major games that typically we get excited about, but there are a ton of games on there that casual gamers are into that Mac gamers will soon have access to, apparently. Anyway, should we do one more question?
Yes,
we shall.
Hey, PC Gamer, this is Steven. I'm just calling in to wonder what your opinions were on all the Portal advertising that Valve is doing right now. Well, technically, they're not advertising themselves, but one little patch that has some mysterious patch notes and some mysterious content has now started a whole discussion on the Steam forums and everywhere else about sequels, and people have been finding crazy things encoded into these updated files, and just I want to get your thoughts on this, because obviously Portal 2 is coming and Valve's probably going to announce that at GDC, and just what are your thoughts on this, and what are your thoughts on advertising? Thanks. Love the podcast and the magazine. Bye.
Well, has anyone else played through the new Portal and played with the radios?
No, I mean, the internet just did it for me.
Yeah. Exactly.
but it's a really cool experience.
No, I realize I want to be part of it too, but at the same time it's like all these articles are popping up about it, so.
But there's an achievement.
Yeah. Oh, don't get us started.
Diggity damn.
but it adds like this weird creepy layer, because there's like these radios and you carry them around, and eventually you find like a red light and there's mysterious signals coming. You try to carry.
Okay. Well, let's put a spoiler warning here, because like, we've all read what happened, or like what the secret is, but some people might want to discover it for themselves. I guess you have to be really nerdy to figure out what it is, though, right?
Yeah, you'd have to know Morse code and hexadecimal, and there's a lot of really weird coding, I guess, going on here.
Yeah, which that was a bunch of nerds.
I couldn't interpret it all, but just the experience was actually pretty cool. Like, it's another layer on Portal. And if you try to carry the radios through the barriers into the elevators,
yeah,
they make the creepiest sound I have ever heard. I encourage everyone to go out and try it, because I, like, jumped out of my chair when I heard that. Anyhow.
Yeah, and the most significant change they've made so far is sort of extending the ending a little bit. This happened yesterday, I guess, in the patch. And again, spoiler warnings for a game that's been out for a year and a half, or 2 years, I guess. But at the end of Portal, I mean, you sort of reach the top of the surface. You're in like sort of a parking lot, I think, of Aperture. And it just sort of fades to black, if I remember correctly. But in this case, now you're sort of being dragged off by what very much sounds like a robot. It has a robot voice. It's making robot walking noises.
It smells like a robot.
Smells like a robot. You don't actually see it, but there was sort of some concept art that was revealed, I guess, through the weird decryption that's going on by the fans of a couple of robots holding hands or something. So,
and I think the patch notes say that it adds valuable asset retrieval. So basically, they are collecting the player character to put them in something else, perhaps a second Portal game.
I understand, and I think again, quickly, like a lot of people have been speculating at the inset of this that it would be a way of linking Portal and Half-Life 3, and that's, you know, the big reason why it's taken so long. And
Half-Life 2, Episode 3.
Yeah, excuse me, thanks. But at this point, I don't even think that's the case.
Yeah, I mean, it could be Portal 2 that links the two franchises together. So.
Yeah, I mean, why make one successful combination of a game when you can make two very successful good games? But back to the advertising. I mean, for me, this kind of leads in, I mean, we always hear about Valve's philosophy of games as platforms, right? They're not static products that release and then they're done. They're constantly updated. I mean, the maps for Team Fortress 2 are updated and have the geometry changed. They add new content. They add new weapons and whatnot. And this is kind of an extension of that. Maybe it's more into the marketing realm, but how postmodern is it to update the ending of a game after it's been out?
Well, I mean, it is an extremely effective marketing technique if, in fact, they are going to announce a Portal 2 soon. Because look at what we're talking about. They've gotten not just us, but the entire internet talking about Portal again 2 years after it came out.
And people get to play it. It gives incentive for you to play it again and get into it.
Exactly. And not just play it, but play it all the way through.
All the way through, yeah. Yeah. I mean, these guys cannot be underestimated, you know?
It's true. And
that's amazing.
Yeah. And I don't want to say this is the reason, but it might be because you have the people that are actually responsible for creatively creating the game and writing it and designing it and creating the characters that are sort of the force behind this marketing. And it's not marketers, right? Mm-hmm. Who knows if that's the case, but that's what I'd speculate.
And I mean, in a lot of ways, I mean, the changes they have made are minimal. I mean, they didn't even have to add a new robot model. They added a robot voice. They had like a little bit of jerky movement of the camera, in the end, and they added a puzzle that's purely auditory, right?
Yeah, basically, and like a series of sort of pieces of art that are scattered through the game. I guess I'm not exactly sure how people are getting these or decrypting these, but
actually, they're audio files, and people are decrypting them into image files. I don't know the specifics.
There was also
super duper nerdy.
There was also a phone number that people dialed with modems to connect something.
To get to a BBS and then they download something else.
Oh my god.
It's incredibly nerdy. So it's very clever on Valve's part.
I think it's the companion cube. He's rescuing you.
Sprouted legs.
If only.
That would be kind of cool if the companion cube like opened up and became a robot.
But anyway. Yeah. I mean, they just.
I think it would be cool if it tried to kill you.
Just ate you alive. With
seeks
its heart.
Revenge, yeah. Dude. It seeks revenge.
Yeah, the hearts turn into skulls. You know,
it's like various emoticons for different states.
Yeah. And then it's the weighted killing cube.
Right. Weighted.
Logan, what the heck have you been playing?
All right. Well, I'm sorry to keep humping the same note over and over and over again, but I'm once again playing through Mass Effect 2. And I, for the life of me, you know what? I can take down gunships. I can, you know, pick up people and throw them down the hallway. The one thing I cannot do, I cannot get laid. Nobody will sleep with me.
Have you been putting points into your sex stat?
I've been doing. I'm begging people. I'm even offering like platinum and iridium. I'm saying, what do you want? What do you want to sleep with me?
It's all about the element zero.
And the closest I can get is now Jacob's like softening up a little bit, and he's like, yeah, but you know what? I got to go back to work, and I'm like, you. It's kind of
the Ezo for the win.
And the lizard. The lizard's got a boner for me, you know? Big deal. You know? What's it? Garrus, you know?
We should probably point out that Logan is playing as a female character in this particular instance.
Who looks like Kate Jackson, right? And who would turn that down?
Yes.
But also I'm trying to finish BioShock. It's getting kind of, I'm in a little tough part here, but I have to admit, it pains me to say it, but I really am looking forward to playing Assassin's Creed 2. Despite, you know, I know I wouldn't buy it, you know.
I think it would be an interesting test, Logan, if you played it at home and see if you do get kicked out.
Yeah, that's true, because, you know,
you can play it for science.
Exactly, because you know my wireless at home is, and this doesn't necessarily have anything to do with Comcast, but it's like an allergy sufferer. You know, it'll be fine for months, and then all of a sudden, for a couple weeks, it just like goes into fits and it starts dropping and, you know, doing spotty stuff. So it will be interesting. So I'm gonna start that this weekend.
All right, Evan, what have you been playing?
Yeah, among the stuff I can talk about, it has been Battlefield Bad Company 2, quite a bit. Really more impressed with gosh, I mean, the destructibility mechanics, as I described in the review in issue 200, it's almost less of a gameplay mechanic exactly. I mean, they really play it up as something that's like changing the game, and you can suddenly shoot people that are behind walls, and whoa, that's amazing. But I just use it to scare people, right? Like they're in a building, and I just unload on a wall, and they're like, oh shit, there's debris and dust, and it's just a fun way of freaking people out.
Terrain deformation is one of my favorite things in games. I love the feedback, and going all the way back to XCOM, just being able to destroy a wall and create my own path, or you know, blast my way through the hull of an alien ship and come in through like directly into the command area and capture the alien commander. Brilliant stuff.
Absolutely. And if I can just say one more thing about Battlefield, I think the best thing about it, and again, when we were talking about respawn timers and pacing and shooters, the way Battlefield creates imprecise weapons and sort of cultivates this identity as this identity of like inaccurate, messy warfare, right? 32 player sort of battle royale, where it's hard to hit with a weapon, it's hard to kill with a weapon, but it kind of lowers the pressure on that, and it prevents like a single player from really dominating things in the same way like high skill games like Quake and Counter-Strike, where that can happen. So that's really a refreshing part of it.
How come it's so easy to kill me?
I guess you never played with me on Battlefield 2.
How come it's so easy for everybody to kill me then? I must have like a really big head. I do in real life.
My one tip to people, I mentioned this to Eric at lunch the other day, was so everybody has a kit. There's basically four classes, and your kit is your equipment. Your class is your equipment, basically. When you kill somebody, their kit falls on the ground. Pick that up. Because your model doesn't change when you change kits. So you can appear as a medic to somebody, but be carrying a assault person or a sniper's equipment. And, you know, that's not a huge advantage, but it can be in some situations.
But the gun you're carrying does change, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All the weapons and equipment change based on what you pick up. So
isn't that technically a war crime?
Shoot a medic?
No, to be like, to fool people into thinking you're a humanitarian aid person.
I'm a reporter. Is there a reporter class embedded journalist?
Yeah, there's just something real sketchy about that there.
Yeah, yeah. That is something that like Battlefield games and some other class-based shooters that have where there's a lot of shooting of medics. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not in the army, but I thought you weren't supposed to shoot those guys. But I mean, the rules are a little bit different because in real life, a medic isn't going to restore somebody to fighting capability on the battlefield, whereas, they're going to keep them from dying. But in game context, they hit them with the defibrillators and
yes.
And they're up and fighting.
Wait,
again.
Evan, can yeah. I get confirmation that there is defibrillators as a medic?
Oh, absolutely. You have to unlock it. I think.
All right,
you have to unlock it.
Looks like that's my first task.
You start off with a light machine gun and a defibrillator. Like, that's the most ridiculous combination of items ever. But it does kind of result in some funny circumstances where
I was so elite with my AK-101 and my defibrillators. Yeah. That's all I needed to top the freaking charts, man.
It's like, an ally goes down and you bring him back to life. He goes down again. Two seconds later, you bring him back to life. It's just get up, get down, get up. It's goofy.
In Battlefield Bad Company 2, I love the engineer because if you sneak up behind someone, you can literally take out your ratchet gun and you just kind of like grind on them with the ratchet gun to death. It's immensely satisfying.
So you just line it up on their nipple and just twist, right?
That's a war crime.
Yeah. I mean, no, you're basically Rosie the Riveter, like killing people.
Wow.
Right. And Eric, how about you, besides Battlefield?
Besides some Battlefield, per normal these days, I've been playing some WoW. I've got two strange objectives that I've kind of set up for myself. In WoW, there's like, they're called Flight Masters. They're kind of, you talk to them and they provide like taxiways between different areas. And by level 35, I'm trying to get every Flight Master in the game so I can level up a lot faster by just flying everywhere. But then by level 40, I'm trying to get an achievement called World Explorer, which basically means you have been to every part of every continent in the entire game.
Can you even do that in level at level 40? I thought you had to be 70 to get to certain areas.
Normally, yes, but my roommate, being Josh, has access to a few different WoW accounts, which means he can teleport me to places I shouldn't be. Sure. Which it's part of maybe why I'm doing this, just to be like, ha, huh, I'm level 40 and I've been everywhere in the game. But part of me is just doing this because, as I've said before, like, part of the fascination of Azeroth with me is that it's this giant world. And although I've played through it before, I've never really made a point of seeing everything in the world. And it's incredible, even so far, what I've discovered. I'm sort of making a Flickr album of screenshots I've taken from all over Azeroth, which I'll link to. I'll post it in the forum, but I don't know. That's mostly what my time's been spent doing, and I'm having fun.
That does explain the weird Twitter panoramas you've been posting. Andy, how about you?
I finished Mass Effect 2, which, you know, just stellar, to use a Star word.
How many died?
Only one.
You punk liar.
Only one. And I, you know, I was okay with that person dying, because.
Yeah. So who died?
Miranda.
No, you're better off without her.
No, that's not true. She's like the only one I cared about saving.
No, she, with that mouth on that woman, her attitude was bad.
I even helped her out with her loyalty mission and everything.
Yeah, I helped her out, and we pulled it off without a hitch, and I got no loyalty from her. What was up with that?
Totes.
And well, Andy, did you get any action?
I was thinking, I was considering a Garrus, but
were you male or female?
I was female. My true feelings laid with Caden still.
But you had to settle for Garrus.
But you know, Garrus, I tap it. but what follows is a
Garrus
dilemma.
Garrus would screw a file cabinet. I mean, come on.
Wait. This is interesting to me. Andy, you played as a girl. Logan, you're playing as a girl. Dan, if I'm not mistaken, you played your first time through as a girl, right?
No, you are mistaken. I played my first time through as a guy, second time through as I'm midway through as a girl.
Oh, okay. Evan, how about you?
Babe.
Babe.
Apparently, that's the cool thing to do. I've got to play through as a girl now, because
coming from somebody who rides a fancy purple chicken, you know, you're not exactly one to talk.
That is a manly level 20 mount, I'll have you know.
It's a purple chicken. It is a chicken painted purple. Okay?
I've got to say, in self-defense, I don't know if you guys would agree, I like the female voice actor a lot better.
She's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not that the male one is bad. I just relate to it. Cool.
Yeah, yeah.
But finishing Mass Effect 2 has brought me upon this dilemma, and I think it's a lot to do with how awesome the characterization was in the game, because I cared so much, and I remember every character so vividly in Mass Effect 2, even more than the first game. And then I started playing Stalker, Call of Pripyat, and everybody is this bland, guitar-playing, vodka-swindling, Stalker.
Swilling.
There you go.
Unless they swindled you out of vodka.
Well, maybe some of them did, but then you go and talk to them, and it's a wall of text. And I'm like, nah, I forgot. But I used to, I loved the Stalker, Shadows of Chernobyl. And so I'm hoping maybe I can acclimatize myself back into the new one. But it's hard after playing such a crazy, awesome cinematic presentation that was Mass Effect 2.
Yeah. And you're gonna love the second playthrough too. I almost never do that. And now I'm on my third.
I know, that seems to be the only solution. Play Mass Effect again.
BioWare games are one of the games that I'm really driven to play through a second time. Mm-hmm. Just because there are so many options where I want to see what could have happened if I had taken the other path. So, I always play through the first time as a, you know, a good guy, and then I really want to see what would happen if I had dropped that guy out the window, for example. So, I have been playing a bunch of RTS games. I am finding that there are consequences to playing too many different ones at the same time, in that you suck at all of them. Because you, I've been playing the StarCraft II beta, I've been playing, some Dawn of War 2, I've been playing Supreme Commander 2, I've been playing Command & Conquer 4 a little bit in the pre-release beta. and I can't win at any of them very much. I did win it at SEPCOM 2 last night, but in StarCraft, I've just been getting the crap kicked out of me. I got booted from the Silver League down to the Copper with Evan.
Because, you make that sound so, you know, below.
I know,
you.
It's disgraceful.
With Evan.
I'm not a fantastic StarCraft player. I make no claims to being a StarCraft pro. But I usually, you know, I can hold my own. I win a match here and there. But I just went on a fantastic losing streak. I've been trying to cultivate myself as a Zerg player, and it's just not working out. It's not them. It's me. I think I might have to switch to Terrans or Protoss, just because the Zerg are such a finesse race. They take like a lot of management. I just don't think I'm fast enough.
Are you insulting the Terrans? Are you saying Terrans are easy to play?
They are easier to play, and they're easier to manage. I mean, just the fact that you can actually queue up units, and you don't have to build a new SCV every time you build a structure.
I suppose that's true. Yeah.
It's a little bit more manageable. I'm not saying they are the easy race. I'm saying that the Zerg are definitely a finesse race. So there. Accuse me of racism, will you? That will just about do it for us this week's offering. If you want to have your question answered next week, Evan, is that contest we're doing still going on?
It still is. It will be until tomorrow, which is Friday.
All right, act quickly then.
Afternoon, yeah. If you send us a letter to letters@pcgamer.com, or if you miss a podcast question.
In MP3 format.
In MP3 format.
Or on the calling in.
Yes.
The number that Andy will now read.
877-404-1337, extension 724, which is PCG.
Yes.
Thank you, Andy.
If you send a question there or to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com, we will enter you to win one of six Battlefield Bad Company 2
download codes,
which
awesome
we have
prize.
Trapped in our lair for them.
You can also visit pcgamer.com to subscribe to our lovely magazine. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter to get wind of these contests. That's where we've been announcing them. And you can get in on that fun. For myself, Logan Decker, Evan Lottie, Eric Belsas, and Andy Bauman, we will see
later.
You all next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah.
Oh, dumping. Mm-hmm.
What?
Sorry.
Dumping? What? Are you taking a dump?
No. Mother Nature is, though. And I'm stoked.
I see.
I'm jealous if you're getting snow.
I'll kill every one of you to stay alive.
So sorry. You tell us every day.
I would sacrifice myself to save you.
Awesome.
So cool.
I shall spare your life, Andy Bauman.
So now you have to change your whole thing.
Almost every one of you to stay alive. No, I'll still kill him to stay alive, yeah, if I have to. But
you once know. You become Supreme Ruler, you won't necessarily
exactly.
destroy me.
Yeah. Yeah. Necessarily. I'll reserve the right. Oh my god, we're getting boozed up by Kristen, our publisher.
Yeah. Boozed up.
Nice.
Yeah, that was very fancy.
Oh yeah!
Little celebratory bubbly to commemorate the 200th issue.
Rock, rock!
Thank you, Kristen.
Thanks, Kristen.
That would be illegal in Utah.
This has like Italian words on it. Wow!
That's how you know it's fancy.
Dude, Battlefield Bad Company 2. Damn it! Why is it so hard? Why did they come out with games that are so hard to say?
I know. It's the Collins, okay. Really.
I think they'll be taking off the jury for this reason too.
Yeah.
Did you get that from Zoo Books?
No, I can't. What are Zoo Books?
You don't remember Zoo Books?
It's like a bit old for Zoo Books, actually.
It's like an educational magazine.
Who said that?
With animals.